Run it up. We are in our final week of programming here on Fox Sports Knoxville, transmitting live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. I am Peyton Gallagher. Justin Scarlett is pushing the buttons better than anybody in the business. And we will start this week off, our final week, with an unfortunate story out of Cincinnati. Not a lot of folks here able to watch that game live. I was. The amount of deflation that the entire NFL community, myself, that game itself felt when Joe Burrow went down against Washington was pretty astonishing. I was watching the game on Red Zone. The immediate reaction was pretty clear and definite that this was going to be bad before they even showed the replay, and it was bad. These injuries, and I am no doctor, but when the knee is hit from the side like that and the foot is planted, there's just so much more potential for damage than there is with the typical knee injury, the typical roll-up that you see in the NFL. And Joe Burrow is going to miss a lot of time. If you haven't heard the official prognosis, after getting, I'm trying to describe the hit, Justin. He got hit low and high at the same time. His foot was planted and his knee buckled to the inside while his foot was still in the ground at an odd angle. ACL, MCL, other structural damage. And yeah, it's bad. He's going to miss. The early prognosis is 9 to 12 months. I think there should be no rush to get him back.
Yeah, it's not exactly like they're competing for anything.
Well, and moreover, the point of this Open isn't to lament the NFL losing a great player for the season, potentially for longer. It is to not necessarily point blame at, but acknowledge the fact that the Bengals didn't adequately protect their quarterback, and this is why this happened. And they shouldn't rush to put him back in because they've got a lot of work to do to protect this guy. A guy that you can argue is the most important player in Bengals franchise history.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing here is that we see a team run a young quarterback out there, much less a number one pick. And I don't think anybody saw this coming. You can't ever see anything like this coming. But I mean, at a certain point, we all kind of expecting, I don't know, we all expected Burrow to make it 16 games. I mean, the guy's out there getting killed every week. I mean, they ran him out there, a number one pick, and he's played pretty well. He's played really well, actually, for a young quarterback.
Sure.
But, I mean, that O-line's just not good. There's no one there to protect him. And, like I said, you can't ever see something like this coming. You never hope that anything like this happens, of course. But at some point or another, you kind of had to suspect that something was going to happen.
Well, and this is the danger of drafting a quarterback before you have things set up around him, because when you have the first overall pick, it means you're really, really bad. But a lot of the time, when a team has that pick, the immediate initial impetus is to go and find ways to protect that quarterback, which the Bengals did not do. When I said he's the most important player in franchise history, I meant it. You don't get a chance to draft a player like him often. It is very rare. The Bengals have only ever drafted a quarterback first overall once. It was Carson Palmer. They had a long run with him. They didn't achieve what they wanted to, but they immediately gave him Andrew Whitworth. They protected him, and he played there for a very long time. David Carr was a very talented, very good quarterback. The Texans were unable to protect him. His career was shortened. He never even scratched what his potential could be after that rookie year. And I'm never going to be the person who's stupid enough to say that a guy getting hurt is actually better for them long term. That's not what I'm saying. Joe Burrow being healthy is option A, ideal. But Joe Burrow now being hurt will take a lot of the mileage off his body long term, because he's not going to be getting hit the way he has been hit throughout the season. This wasn't the first time that he's been banged up in a game. He's got a target on his back. He's the first overall pick. He just had the best season in college football history. Guys want to welcome him to the league. He's been knocked out of games this year three times. just because of the nature of the hits, not necessarily because he was showing any kind of physical fatigue, but just because the team felt like they needed to give him a second to gather himself because of how he just got hit. This was inevitable. He has been sacked 38 times already this year, 32 technically. The team has given up 38 sacks. He's been sacked 32 times. That's the second highest number in the league. It was on a higher trajectory early. It slowed down. But when you look at all the pressure stats and you watch the Bengals play, Joe Burrow can't stay in the pocket for more than 2 seconds. I haven't confirmed this number. Being the lowest in the league, I guess, my educated guess would be it would be at the very bottom, if not very close to it. 2.1 seconds before pressure on average per snap. The fastest quarterback in terms of snap to release average throw time in the league is Ben Roethlisberger at 2.39. Burrow is about league average at 2.65. You do the math. The average time it takes Burrow to get rid of the football is 2.5 seconds. Pressure is arriving every 2.1 seconds per play. That's not a winning formula. Pressure is getting there before it is physically possible enough, possible to throw the football. And that's because his offensive line is horrible. It is the worst in the league. Its best player is Jonah Williams, who is a tackle that they drafted in the top 10, who is a project left tackle that's been forced to move to right probably if he hasn't already over the last couple of games. He will be there eventually. Who's coming off a hip injury and is really just not a guy that's been very good in the league so far. They don't have anything around Burrow. And you can't throw him back out there because I remember what happened with RG3. Very same field, very same place in the field against Seattle in a playoff game. They rushed him back, and he was never the same. RG3 and Joe Burrow are very different players, but this team is going to be really bad for a while, and it's going to take more than 1 year to get this offensive line right. So there should be absolutely no rush. I'm a little bit charged up here. I've been a little bit all over the place because we made all the jokes early on the season about how Joe Burrow was going to die behind this offensive line. But it was so predictable. We were making light of the situation. I don't think anybody here thought that he was going to get hurt, especially like this. But it was pretty obvious that he could not take the kind of hits that he was taking long term and stay healthy. It's just a numbers game. If he gets hit like the way he was getting hit early on, which he did throughout the year, this was always going to happen. And it never got better. The Bengals had the opportunity to assess their offensive line through the first half of the season and make a trade to protect Burrow. They chose not to. This guy was in immediate danger, and they ignored it, and this is what happens. It is the Bengals' fault. I was going to shy away from it. I'm not going to. It's a fact. This is the Bengals' fault. And I hope Joe Burrow's okay. I hope he can overcome this. But it just got a lot harder for him and this team unnecessarily. The Bengals jeopardized this man's career. That's the beginning of the show. Run It Up continues after this. Couch Chronicles. I'm going to go through everything I saw in the NFL this past Sunday. Big game tonight on Monday. Tampa Bay in Los Angeles. That'll be fascinating. That will be on our airwaves as well. We'll be back here in a moment from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios at Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Run It Up, WKGN Fan Run Radio. Run It Up. It's Monday, 2 days before Thanksgiving. All I care about is the football being played. That sounded bad.
No turkey for you this year, huh?
I mean, yeah, I guess turkey's keto. So that's a plus.
There you go.
I mean, Thanksgiving turkey, this is, I feel like, becoming a commonly accepted opinion that nobody really likes the turkey.
I like turkey. I'm not here for your turkey slander.
It's nobody's favorite. Nobody's going to tell you that their favorite part of Thanksgiving, aside from like the actual meaning of it, you know, being thankful for everything that you have in life. Forget that. I don't care. Nobody's going to tell you the turkey is the best part of Thanksgiving.
It's better than ham.
Yeah, sure.
Is that fair?
That's fair. I'd agree with that. I live for mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes and pumpkin pie. Get me through it. Let's talk about a football game that it felt like the players, there might be a few of them that could only eat mashed potatoes after this contest. The Titans and the Ravens, this was a fight. We're going to start up with Couch Chronicles now. I probably should have said that off the top. Take you through the full odyssey that was this Sunday of games that was all over the place. Taysom Hill starting at quarterback and being okay is like story number six. Justin, let's start with the Titans and the Ravens. I assume you watched this game.
I was able to watch the fourth quarter, yes.
That's the part that mattered.
Yeah.
That's the part that mattered. Did you see that Derrick Henry, literally the path of his run to win the game was in the shape of an L? He literally handed the Ravens an L?
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah. What an incredible run, by the way. Just, I was waiting for him to break one. The Ravens had kept everything in front of them the entire game. They're a great defense. They're a great front. That's not surprising. The Titans' offensive line without Conklin and Lewan is not as impactful.
I mean, the Titans were down their third string left tackle in that game. He's not even a tackle, to my knowledge.
Up against Yannick Ngakoue and Matthew Judon and the pass rushers that Baltimore has, that's not great. I will say, the receivers, other than a couple bad plays from A.J. Brown early on, played pretty well, and that was a big reason why the Titans won this game.
I mean, A.J. Brown's touchdown was incredible.
Huge. But it felt like he had had the yips ever since the drop against Indy early on last week on Thursday. He did not play it well in the first half, had a couple drops. Second half came alive. I think he might be the most exciting run-after-catch receiver in the NFL. Like, the guy's pretty much Derrick Henry, except he wears 11 and plays receiver. Just an absolute unit out there, outside the numbers. And when you've got a quarterback like Ryan Tannehill, who can't always beat you down the field, having a guy who can throw a dude on his back and take him for a ride and break a couple tackles and go score, it's really big. And I've kind of learned that this offense for the Titans, this is my first big observation from this game, goes where A.J. Brown can take them. If A.J. Brown's not there, the Titans are going to struggle mightily to generate offense. I mean, you look at their losses, and they're three of A.J. Brown's worst games, or two of his worst games. He had a 100-yard game in one of their losses earlier this year. I believe it was against Pittsburgh. I could be wrong on that. Don't quote me, but Cincinnati, largely stymied, really, really struggled in that game. This game, struggled at the start, got it rolling. But you look at the numbers, you look at the box score, the game log. A.J. Brown has had his two worst games of the year and two of the Titans' three losses. The only times he's gone for under 30 yards, the Titans have lost. When he got hurt against Denver, the offense really took a step back almost immediately. I will say that Corey Davis has quietly had one of the most improved seasons of any player in the NFL. Do you think that's fair, Justin?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Here are the numbers on that. He's had an 8% uptick in his catch rate, which is a really, really solid 70.9 now. That's a very strong number at receiver. Averaging more yards per game this year than ever before by 13. He's up to just a shade under 70 at 68.6. And he's dominating good corners. Like, he took it to Marcus Peters in this game, going for over 100 yards for the third time this year. I wonder what his market's going to be this offseason. I wonder if the Titans are going to, A, want to re-sign him, which I think they will.
I think they do now, yeah. I think they're regretting not
picking
taking that
fifth-year
option.
Yeah, but that was the right call at the time. He couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah.
He had been wildly inconsistent, and I loved Corey Davis coming out of Western Michigan. I was so high on him. I've been pretty disappointed with the play that you've seen from him over the last 3 years of his career, but he has been fantastic this year. And for a team like Kansas City that might be looking to replace a guy like Sammy Watkins this next season, a dude like Corey Davis slots in. He is a top-end number two receiver in the NFL. Very, very good performance from him in this game and kind of kept the Titans' offense alive while you were getting struggles out of a dude like A.J. Brown, especially without Humphreys to relieve things as well. Jonnu Smith And I'm just going to continue to praise the Titans because they gutted this win out and deserve a lot of credit. Jonnu Smith is a top 10 tight end, like bona fide. 8 touchdowns so far this year, that leads the league and his position. He's become such a weapon. So much development from him. Really just across this offense, there's been pretty large strides by everybody. And if the game gets into overtime, the Titans are going to win. That's just how they're built. They're going to hand it to Derrick Henry. They're going to lean on you. They're going to push the ball down the field in 3- and 4-yard increments. And it's going to be curtains for whoever you're playing. They've won all their overtime games this year. This is how they do it. This is how they do it.
I think another big key is getting Derrick Henry over 100 yards. Because with the exception of the Indianapolis game last Thursday, and the Cincinnati game earlier this season, as far as I know, the stat is that those are the only two games that the Titans have lost while Derrick Henry's been on the roster.
Sure.
That he rushed for more than 100 yards. He went for 133 yesterday.
And it's harder for him this year. It takes a lot more because they don't have Conklin. And like you said, they're on a third-string left tackle, and the middle of their line starting to age out a little bit, which makes me kind of think the Titans' window is now, and they're not going to be good enough to win a title. That's pretty obvious. Sorry. I just think that's true. They can't really score, I don't think, the way they need to with the quickness they need to keep up with some of the elite offenses in the NFL. I just don't think they have enough defensively, and I don't think they have the offense that's built the way it needs to be to compete that way. But they're winning games now, and when their back's up against the wall, that tends to be when they're at their best. And that goes as a massive, massive credit to Mike Vrabel. Kind of got into it with John Harbaugh before this game, which was cool. I like that. A little bit of edge. Last thing I'll say on this one. The Ravens are in big trouble. If they lose again, they play Cleveland, at Cleveland, here in a couple weeks. They lose again, they're done. They're not making the playoffs. And that will make them reevaluate everything. Lamar Jackson is a special quarterback, but right now he's a system quarterback. And the system's not working well enough for them to win. This defense is Super Bowl good, that's obvious. The guys around him have not been great, although Willie Snead and Mark Andrews and J.K. Dobbins and obviously Hollywood Brown, who's been kind of up and down but is still a very talented player, that's not the worst group of pass catchers in the league.
No, by no means.
At some point, it's just got to be on him. And he keeps getting in the last couple of weeks. If you go as far as to trace back to the Steelers game, because Baltimore is now 1-3 in their last 4, Lamar's had an opportunity to win the game in each of those 3 games. He's had the ball last. And New England, I guess that Bill Belichick turned up the weather machine, so he does get a little bit of an excuse there because it was pouring. But at some point, Lamar Jackson has to transcend the system. The system, and I'll credit Mina Kimes with this take, enlightening me to this pretty profound realization about the Ravens. They lived on matchup advantages last year that they just simply don't have. Their offensive line isn't overwhelming any people anymore. Not without Yanda and Ronnie Stanley. They can't get into these 3 tight end sets where they don't lose anything in terms of their ability to be effective in the passing game with route running and pass catching because they got rid of Hayden Hurst and now Nick Boyle's hurt too. So that's gone. And they just can't create the numbers matchups that they needed to over last year to be so successful in the running game because everybody knows what they're doing and Lamar Jackson can't get anybody defensively to treat him like an elite passer, and rightfully so. The only way they break out of this is if Lamar just says, hey, you're asking me pretty much to run the football because you're spying me and only bringing 3 guys. I think I can beat your spying linebacker. I'm going to go do it now. And guess what? He can, so he needs to. Stop sitting in the pocket. Stop just waiting for somebody to come open that's not going to downfield. If the system is failing you, transcend the system. The best quarterbacks in the league do it all the time. And he is one of those. He is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Certainly top 6. Probably top 5. I think it's pretty clear to me, at least, that Mahomes, Rodgers, Russell, Kyler, Deshaun, that's your top five. I think he comes in at six. But he is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and it's time for him to take everything into his hands and take over, because he can. It may not be the best thing for the longevity of his career. It probably isn't. But for them to be successful right now, Lamar Jackson has to take over and start running the football. And that's it. That's all I got on that game. Spent a little bit too much time on that one. We'll move on to the Saints and Falcons. I picked the Falcons to win this game. I was incorrect. The Saints defense showed up in a big way. I'll get to that. Taysom Hill is pretty clearly, I think, not the answer long term. He's got to rear up to throw the ball 40 yards downfield. He's 31.
Yeah.
He was in college for 8 years. He got hurt a lot. Got a lot of red shirts.
He's a better right-handed version of Tebow.
I mean, pretty much. He could be the answer now, though. He could be what this team needs to get Drew Brees back. For all the people who are saying that Drew Brees was hurting this team, I don't think that was correct. I think it's pretty obvious considering how many games they've reeled off in a row. And it's not only about Brees, but when you're playing without Michael Thomas, kind of hurts your offense. Having the best receiver in the league on the field kind of helps. They stayed above water, and they're in a good position. The problem is they just can't lose a game here because Tampa Bay is right on their heels, and if they lose two, Tampa Bay is likely to win the division, which will be a big deal. Let's break down some of the numbers on Taysom Hill. It really was run, 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 shot play for a lot of the game. They tried to throw the deep ball a couple times with Taysom Hill, and for the most part, either got bailed out by a PI or completed it. Hill was 5 of 6 on passes that traveled more than 10 yards in this game. Had about 117 yards on these attempts, which was good for just over half of the total yardage he accounted for in the air in this contest. He also was able to, pretty effectively with Sean Payton's assistance, use a screen game. They got about 54 yards on 8 yards per play running screens in this game, which will be a big part of their offense. Justin, were you aware of the fact that Alvin Kamara is the leading receiver on this team, not by an insignificant margin, but also has more receiving yards by close to 200 yards than he does rushing yards this year?
No, I didn't. I mean, the stat gets thrown around with him a lot is the 500-500, right?
Yeah.
However many seasons to start your career with 500 receiving, 500 rushing. And he's already at that point this year.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's not really that surprising.
He's like 687 receiving yards so far this year. He might get to 1,000. Which is insane for a running back that probably will not rush for 1,000. That's incredible. But I think it's pretty clear to me with Taysom Hill at quarterback, and I also think there's a possibility that the Saints kind of play it matchup by matchup, where if they're playing a team that's on a horrible run defense like the Falcons, and maybe they're weaker on the back end, they might play Jameis. I could see that happening. This was just the right matchup to play Taysom Hill, and they didn't, and it was effective, and they won. But this is a defensive football team now until Drew Brees gets back. I think they kind of were already, actually. But the Saints are going to have to completely change themselves now. They're going to have to play complementary football, which I think Taysom Hill allows them to do. I'll say this. The 9 points that the Saints surrendered in this game to Atlanta, that is the lowest total, Justin, you guess, since when?
No clue.
It's been
three years. Yeah,
since they scored that little. It was against New England in October of 2017 in their Super Bowl hangover year where they just weren't as good as they were supposed to be. The Saints are a team that underperformed massively on the defensive side of the ball to start the year. They've taken off over the last couple of weeks. They're eighth in the league at this point in points per game allowed. It's 22, but over the last 3 weeks, they've only allowed 8.3 points per game. That's astonishingly good. They've gotten 10 sacks in the last two contests since they introduced Quan Alexander, the guy that they traded for at the deadline, gives them some range and some athleticism in order to try and chase some of these guys down sideline to sideline and make it easier on their pass rush to really get after guys. Justin, I'm going to throw another trivia time stat at you. Okay?
All right.
Guess who the NFL's leader in sacks is?
Not a clue. I mean, my mind first points to Aaron Donald, but...
He's up there. He's third half sack behind first, having not played this week, with 9.
Given where you're bringing the stat up, it has to be a Saints player.
Right. And you would think Cameron Jordan, right?
Probably. That's the first one I would go to.
That'd be incorrect.
So who is it?
Do you know who Trey Hendrickson is?
Yeah, he's the 91, wears, like, no gloves.
Yep.
That's the only reason I know him.
I watch a lot of football, a lot of football. I had no idea who Trey Hendrickson was till the Sunday night game against Tampa. No clue. He's leading the league in sacks with 9.5. He's tied with Myles Garrett. So we should talk about that probably a little bit. David Onyemata, obviously Cameron Jordan, who hates the Falcons. I don't know what they did to him.
And Jordan Cameron.
He had 3 sacks in this game, but they're getting home, and this defense is the identity of this team now. Now that Janoris Jenkins is back healthy, now that they've got Quan Alexander, they're going to have to win games defensively, and they should. This is a really good defense. Talent-wise, it might be the best defense in the league. It's definitely better than the Bucs, who, by the way, for all the acclaim we give the Bucs, points per game-wise allowed, the Saints climbed ahead of them this week. So, take that for what you will. Moving on down, we'll go quickly here because I know Ryan Blank is on the line. We're going to talk about Kansas City and that game against Las Vegas last night. And pretty much, if you don't want to hear us fawning about Patrick Mahomes, turn the radio dial until 9 p.m. Eastern rolls around, because that's what's going to happen. But I do want to get to a quick couple notes. I don't know what's going on with the Dolphins. I didn't watch that game in its totality. I didn't see the end of it, so I'm not going to comment. But it seemed awful weird that they didn't trust Tua after giving him the starting job. And I understand the circumstances. I understand you're in a divisional fight. I understand you're trying to make the playoffs. And I understand maybe you want to go with the more experienced guy to lead you down the field. But right on brand, Ryan Fitzpatrick throws a pick in the end zone with a chance to win that game. So, I mean, it's easy to have hindsight bias on that. But it just felt weird. You gave Tua the starting job. You would think you would let him have the opportunity, even if he had played badly, to go win that game for you. And I trust Brian Flores completely. Otherwise, I'd be questioning this a lot more. Going to move on now. Deshaun Watson deserves a lot better than he gets in Houston. He's playing at an MVP level. Nobody cares because they're horrible. By the way, they get nothing for being horrible because they traded their pick. That's going to Miami. If I'm the Steelers, and I'm just going to insinuate this, and we'll talk more about it tomorrow, and I've been thinking about this for a while, I would offer a Ricky Williams package. I'd say, Ben, you served us well. Enjoy retirement. I'd trade Vince Williams. That clears the cap for Deshaun Watson. I've done the math here. And I'd offer all 7 picks that I have in this upcoming draft. And I might offer next year's first too, because this team in Pittsburgh is good enough to win a Super Bowl right now. And if they added Deshaun Watson, that would be worth more than the value that you could get from an entire draft. I firmly believe that. So, I'm just going to leave that there and move on. Last thing here on the Steelers. Just wanted to... Their game against Jacksonville was a game against Jacksonville in which they won. They weren't super sharp, but they won handily. Jake Luton threw 4 picks. Minka Fitzpatrick had the best defensive performance in the NFL of the week, had 2 interceptions, was ridiculous. I just wanted to throw this number out there. The Steelers have 3 of the top 5 players in total pressures in the NFL right now. 3 of the top 5. TJ Watt is first with 57. Bud Dupree is fourth with 41. Stephon Tuitt is fifth with 40. This might not just be the best pass rush in the NFL right now. It might be the best pass rush we've seen in a decade. It very well could be, statistically, by the time it's all said and done, the most prolific pass rush in NFL history, and I don't think that's hyperbole at all. Okay, we're going to talk about the Chiefs on the other side of a break. This is Run It Up, WKGN Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. Run It Up, closing out Hour number one, Ryan Blank is with us on the phone, and we're going to take 10 minutes to tell you why Patrick Mahomes is awesome and the best ever. And it'll probably get really annoying, but we're going to do it anyway because Patrick Mahomes is awesome and the best ever. Ryan writes for Arrowhead Live, covers the Kansas City Chiefs. Before we get into all of that, Ryan, how are you doing on this fine Monday night, my man?
Doing good. Just watching the Monday night game, which I'm surprised that the Bucs got dominated like that on the Rams' first drive. But overall, I'm doing well.
All right. So I can't speak for what's happening in MNF tonight because I'm not watching them on the air. Let's talk about last night. So Pat Mahomes continues to just be magical. I want to talk to you about, because you've got a direct knowledge of how beat up the Chiefs offense is. And everybody makes all of this acclaim for Russell Wilson and pipes up and says he's not got a lot around him. His offensive line's really bad. And I don't feel like the Chiefs get the same treatment. Can you walk the people through just how banged up the Chiefs are right now on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, let's start off with the wide receivers.
Okay.
Mecole Hardman did not practice all week because he was on the list due to exposure, and he barely played because he wasn't 100% because he hadn't been practicing. Sammy Watkins, who was designated to return, tweaked his calf, and it missed his fifth straight game. And then you have to look at the offensive line. That's just honestly a mess. Schwartz is out for at least two more games as he was put on injured reserve. Fisher was on the COVID list throughout the week and only practiced 1 or 2 days. Then you have Remmers, who is battling through a rib injury. Kilgore, who's, I think, has a hurt ankle and still has to play.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chiefs had to go out. They had to activate Brian Witzman from the practice squad because so many guys are injured. And now they brought back Stefan Wisniewski, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But the offense is just banged up. And honestly, I expected the defensive line of the Raiders to have a much bigger game than they did.
Yeah. No, I mean, the Raiders were without Cleveland Farrell, and it's not a great defensive line anyway. But considering, I don't know what offense in the NFL could lose what is effectively two of their top three receivers, be without their backup tight end, which is significant for the Chiefs because there is a steep drop between the guy who is second string in the depth chart and everybody else. The rest of the tight ends are almost unplayable. A team that would be without what was projected to be four of their five starting offensive linemen coming into the year, and still just put up 35 points and look unstoppable. And I feel like that part of Patrick Mahomes, that greatness, gets overlooked because people see Tyreek Hill and Kelce and just expect that the Chiefs offense is going to be great. And for a large part, it can be because of those guys. But if you stick Alex Smith into this situation, the Alex Smith that was quarterbacking the Chiefs a couple years ago, I think the Chiefs are an 8, maybe 6 or 5 win football team. And that part of the quantitative greatness of Patrick Mahomes, I think, is being a little bit underappreciated in just the high expectations the Chiefs have week in, week out.
Well, I disagree with the 5-6 win team. I'd give them 9, an 8-9
really?
Win team.
They have a pretty below average. I know the numbers have been good, but the defense has been pretty rough the last couple of weeks. Without
but
the offensive
Alex
lineman
Smith,
that they've lost, I mean, I just don't see it personally.
But Alex Smith, one of the best things that he do is he's a game manager and he takes care of the football. And I think that is what really gives him value. Plus, when you have him actually throw downfield, he's a solid quarterback throwing downfield. But this is not a Super Bowl favorite caliber team with Alex Smith at quarterback. People are going to say that Mahomes is led through Kelce, through Hill, through mm-hmm. Watkins when he's healthy. Honestly, Mahomes is what makes those guys that good. Yeah, Kelce was having 1,000-yard seasons with Alex Smith, but he hasn't been as dominant. He's in the top 5 for receiving as a tight end because he has
yeah.
Patrick Mahomes. Tyreek Hill can run those, can go 50 yards downfield and get hit in stride because of Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Mahomes makes them better. And people saying, oh, it's the other way around. Honestly, I question their knowledge a little bit.
Yeah.
Mahomes makes them that good.
Yeah. Let's before I get into whether or not you're actually worried about the Chiefs, because there have been some kind of alarming sequences in some of these games the last couple of weeks that I do want to talk to you about. Let's just talk about 75 yards in 75 seconds. How many quarterbacks in the league do you think you would have as much confidence as you do in Patrick Mahomes in that game situation?
Of course, I have to look at Aaron Rodgers.
Right, who literally did it this past week against the Colts.
Who did it right before the game that was on before.
Right.
And that is very limited. I don't know if I can trust Russell Wilson, honestly, because of how he has just kind of fallen off. Tom Brady, I can put on that list. Drew Brees is a maybe on that list. There's a very slim list. And the thing is, people are going to say that, oh, they had a ton of time left, all that. Look at Andy Reid's coaching history. He does not do well with clock management. That is one thing that has always been a knock against Andy Reid. But when you got a guy like Patrick Mahomes who can get them down the field in roughly under a minute inside the Raider 30 without a timeout and zero spikes, that's something right there.
Yeah. No, it was incredible. I thinking to myself, the biggest weakness that Andy Reid has, it's almost like the Achilles heel that he had when he was dipped in the River Styx, is his inability to manage late-game situations. It is mind-boggling how bad he is at it compared to how good he is at everything else. And I'm like, the Chiefs are just going to mismanage the clock and lose this game. And Pat, again, continues to just overcome circumstances. Time in, time out. He is special. He is so much better than everybody else in the league at the position. It's ridiculous. And the fact that nobody expects the Chiefs to take a step back despite all of these factors tells me exactly how good he is that he's so good that we don't see any of the other holes in this team. I do want to ask you this, Ryan. The Raiders presents now what seems to be a legitimate threat to Kansas City. The Panthers scored on them. There's obviously something going on with this defense that's not great. But I want to ask you, do you feel like the Chiefs are more vulnerable than you did a couple weeks ago?
Honestly, a little bit. And the main thing is that last night I was with a bunch of friends screaming and yelling at my TV.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because countless times, Chris Jones and Frank Clark were being held, thrown to the ground, had their face masks grabbed. I'm like, throw the flag, because there are at least six holding calls that were just blatantly missed on either of those two guys.
Well, and that's league-wide. In the NFL, there is an imperative now to not call holding because they want to see more points, and it is a flag that gets thrown more commonly than almost anything else, and you just haven't seen as much holding. I think it's down something like, I don't want to just make up a number here, but I think it's down like something like 30%, if not more, across the league, and that's just been true for everybody.
Yeah, and that's what frustrates me most. It really frustrates me, the lack of holding calls. But the defense, there are two guys that extremely impressed me last night. Traverius Ward was as aggressive and physical as I've ever seen him. Willie Gay, whatever he's put on the field, he makes plays. He needs to get a starting role over Ben Neiman. Because whenever he's out there, he's making plays, and he is that athlete
right in
the linebacking core that is needed.
Sure thing.
The main worry with me is Breland on his side. That pass interference in the end zone last night was aggravating to such an extent because Nelson Aguilar was not going to catch that ball. Even if he wasn't touched, he wasn't going to catch that ball. He wasn't going to have possession. And he continues to have those awful holding calls, pass interference, and just those stupid penalties that he isn't learning from. And I think that's the reason why DeAndre Baker was signed, is that they might try to limit Breland's playing time.
Maybe. We'll see. Charvarius Ward had 31 snaps in coverage. Last night against the Raiders, he allowed all of one receiving yard. That's incredible. This defense, if they do anything, they make two or three plays a game, that's all they're going to need. The Chiefs are going to get the job done on the offensive end, and that's just the bottom line. I will say this, they look more vulnerable than they have the entire season right now. We'll see how they play against Tampa next week. That's Ryan Blank. You can find his work on Arrowhead Live. He's got a myriad of podcasts that he's a part of. You can find him on Twitter at RMBlank4. Ryan, thanks for joining the program today.
Thanks, Ben.
All right. That's hour number one. Hour number two, we're going to talk about Tennessee. If you want to stick around for that, I understand. If you don't, that makes sense, too. Run it up. WKGM, Fox Sports, Knoxville, Fan Run Radio.